Hi, and welcome to another episode of Cine Nation. I am Brandon Sparks, and I am here with Chris Beecham.
Yeah, how's it going, man?
Chris is currently in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. I am in Los Angeles, California. Chris currently goes to the University of Alabama, and this past semester he had a film radio show called 24 Frames. And Chris talked a lot about films currently, and I was actually on the show one time. But today, we're here to talk about, he had a topic he wanted to talk about, and the topic is kind of like, what's Hollywood, has Hollywood lost its originality? It's kind of a question that a lot of people keep asking with the saturation of the market with reboots and sequels and remakes and prequels and spinoffs and franchise films. And I guess it's a good question to ask because, like, this past year we've had a lot of announced remakes and things of that nature. Like, the one of the bigger ones that kind of trying to reboot these dormant franchises, and those female Ghostbusters was announced by Sony with Paul Feig directing it. It's going to be Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig and a couple other people. I think just recently Chris Hemsworth was announced as the secretary role. So there's a male guy in there. There's also was a male reboot of Ghostbusters with Channing Tatum and the Russo brothers directing. That was also rumored. That one's rumored. The biggest one, I remember the one that happened that we were kind of all surprised about, the big rumored one was Indiana Jones. There was a rumor for Indiana Jones and that Chris Pratt would be the new Indiana Jones with Steven Spielberg directing. And supposedly the rumor was that Spielberg wanted Chris Pratt to do it so he could direct it. And the question I'm going to ask Chris is, because I want to get his thoughts on this. So just, Chris, what are your thoughts on kind of all of this, the current status of what this industry is with all these reboots and everything?
For me, I'm not against reboots at all, or remakes, sequels, any of the kind of conventional stuff that Hollywood puts out. I'm against the way Hollywood uses them. I feel like there have been times when a reboot was necessary. You know, in the case of Batman, it almost seemed as if I think there was this kind of collective feeling that Batman was never really done right or done to its full potential. And so, and it was also basically a decade between, almost a decade between the Batman and Robin, the fourth in the previous series, and then Chris Nolan's Batman. And so there are a few situations where reboots can actually be interesting if they reimagine something, or if they offer kind of a very, very different perspective on something. But in the case of Indiana Jones, I think it's I'm a huge Indiana Jones fan, at least of the first three, and to me it's sacrilegious to consider, you know, just kind of redoing the whole thing. It's an obvious cash grab to me. It's like, well, the previous Indiana Jones, Harrison Ford is getting a little bit old. The previous film critically didn't do so well. Let's just start over, you know. And we know people will go see this movie, and you know, the studios are right. So I'm against it as far as Indiana Jones goes, and many of the others as well.
Okay. How the big one that it's the one that's weird to me with Ghostbusters. I'm kind of fine with, I don't know, I'm fine with the reboot or a sequel or whatever. But with Ghostbusters, they're trying to do a whole cinematic universe, is what the like Dan Aykroyd and Ivan Reitman are like. We're doing, it's going to be a whole new universe. So we're going to do multiple films, and it's going to expand from the film world to television to merchandising and everything. So now it's like everyone's after, because I know you had an article in the show notes about kind of Marvel and the way that superhero movies and all these big films are going. I know in your article it states, and it's actually very true, is used to studios would do films like this to basically make money to do those smaller films. Those, like, because I think, I remember we talked about it at school one point, that, like, at one point, people were releasing, like, Kramer versus Kramer through a big Hollywood studio. And nowadays, you wouldn't see that.
Right.
Nowadays, it's like, what right. big film's coming out this weekend?
That's the thing, is like, the thing that I'm I love a lot of Hollywood films, but Hollywood has changed drastically throughout the years. It's kind of it's always transforming, and now it's in a place where really the only thing commercial filmmaking is offering is kind of these big franchise, these overt kind of series that are trying to make money, where there's spinoffs, there's TV shows, there's planned sequels like 5-10 years ahead. It's taking all these old characters and redoing them over and over and over again. And let's look back at 2014. Let's talk about all the films that got awards recognition, got, you know, attention, like Birdman, Boyhood, Whiplash, Foxcatcher. All these films, the films that really have kind of, that are always moving cinema forward and that really matter to people artistically, seem to be kind of suppressed by this system where, you know, something like Boyhood made, of course, a lot, and it didn't make as much money, wasn't released into as many theaters, which is actually an understatement. But that's because of the commercial system that's in place. These other movies, there's not really much room for them, and yet they're the ones that are the most artistically rewarding. It's just kind of a sad thing going on, I think.
It's just because what studios decided a while ago is that I guess in the 90s and early 2000s, when Miramax and everything started going up in the 90s, studios started breaking off and creating their own, like, independent companies. Like the films that focused on, like, independent features. Like Sony.
Yeah.
Yeah, Fox like Searchlight, Sony Picture Classics, to where it's like, okay, that's we'll have that and we'll do that over, like, we'll have those little films over there. And I guess it's just because going off of that, like in your article that we have, it's, I'll get the name of it real quick, by Mark Harris called The Birdcage on Grantland.com. It talks about how, like, a lot of those films have a hard time trying to find, like, try to get funding for those films. And that's kind of actually a very big deal, is that a lot of those films that we consider that push cinema forward or kind of help change the way a story is told, it's hard to find money to back those films. And I know one example, I mean, there's a lot of examples, but I know one example was, I think it was an art or interview Steven Spielberg was talking about how it was hard for him to get money to make Lincoln.
Right. Yeah, I was actually going to say that too.
Yeah, it's Steven Spielberg's is directing the movie. You have Daniel Day-Lewis playing Lincoln. You have all these other great actors around it, and he couldn't find money for it. Actually, he owns his own studio, like pretty much with DreamWorks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He almost had to go to HBO and release to HBO. Like,
he couldn't even find money to back a film like that, and it's really just like if like someone said, like, if Spielberg can't get the money, who can? It's like, we'll actually post that. I found the article because it was him and George Lucas spoke.
George Lucas. It was at USC. They're actually at USC, I think.
Yeah, when, it was at USC a few years ago, and it was this close to ask HBO. It's talking about the implosion of what filmmaking was heading to. Is heading to. And this actually brings up a good question, or a big thing, because, let's see, Spielberg says there's going to be an implosion where 3 or 4 movies, or maybe even half a dozen, mega-budget movies are going to go crashing into the ground, and that's going to change the whole paradigm. That's pretty true.
It is true. And it's happened before. I think there's this cycle where the studios kind of get ahead of themselves. You know, it's so easy for the studios to kind of choose, business over the art. There's always that tension between the two. And once, you know, films start making money, or they started making money in the early 20th century, then it became kind of a business, and it was all about product. And they kind of went overboard with that in the 60s. The studio system crumbled, and then the 70s came along, and a new wave of American directors came forward and kind of revitalized the art form. And then it it because of a lot of great films that made a lot of money, they went back to their old ways, mm-hmm. and it's going to happen again.
Yeah, but and going off of Spielberg talking about like these films that basically, because and the thing is, it's happened a few times where these films, these big, huge, possible blockbusters that cost millions of dollars, end up doing absolutely nothing. And the one that's done it the most recently to me, but they haven't been fazed by it, was Disney, because Disney released John Carter, which was a big box office like mess up. Let me get the actual on Box Office Mojo. The production budget was $250 million.
Jeez, wow.
Yeah, the worldwide gross was 284. But the thing is, the movie really probably cost close to $500 million.
It's always more than they say. It's always more.
Well, because that's production budget. You add in marketing, and when I add in marketing, I pretty much double what the production budget was. So it was close to $500 million probably, and so it lost the studio a lot of money, and I think they actually fired their president of production president of the head of like the film department or film division. Let's see. And then what even made it worse, the next year, I think it was the next year, they did Lone Ranger, which pretty much had the same outcome. It actually the production budget was $215 million. And worldwide gross was $260 million, so it probably spent close to $450 million for marketing, give or take or whatever, and it made $260 million worldwide. And to me, if it would have been any other studio that did two films like that a year away from one another, they probably would not be doing business right now.
Right? Yeah, they would have gone under.
They would have gone under because. That's one big, it's like Spielberg saying, if these studios, they want to take the, it's almost like they feel there's no risk in releasing a box office film of that nature.
Yeah.
But
it's a gamble. I mean, it's like they're putting all their chips in one pile and then kind of just crossing their fingers that, and you know, there's probably a lot more thought that goes into it than what I just described, but it's still basically the same thing. It's let's hope this works because it worked before, you know. That's the whole thing is like, how do we know if this is going to work? Well, did it work before? That's how the whole system works. It's kind of redoing things from the past, and there's a huge compromise that comes with that. Unless under certain circumstances, I think that this reboot culture, you know, obviously comes from Batman, the Christian Nolan Batman films. And it's too much. It's nothing's really sacred anymore. Like Spider-Man, Superman, all these things. It's like whenever the filmmakers made these films, like Superman in the 70s or Spider-Man or even Batman in the 80s and 90s, they were making them with the intention that this was going to be the definitive representation of this character on film. But nowadays, you know, with this reboot culture, it's like, well, we're going to make this now, but if someone else is probably going to make it later on, so who cares? You know, we don't have to make it a definitive thing. So I don't know. I think that there's a lot there's a laziness that comes with that. It's not just a lack of ideas or originality. It's just kind of an unappreciation for, I guess, movies as an art and as a form of self-expression for directors, and more as a enterprise that doesn't want to take risks, really.
Yeah. See, I'm fine with reboots to a degree. By that I mean, I don't want to be like what Spider-Man did was just kind of insane to me. The first time, it's like, okay, guys. Remember that movie we did 3 or 4 years ago? Well, we're just completely disregarding that and redoing it, and we're just starting with the same story we did the first time.
Exactly.
And right. everyone's like, now, like, granted, it still made money, but it didn't make as much as the other movies did. And right. then they do Spider-Man 2, and pretty much Spider-Man 2 just followed the same route as Spider-Man 3 was, is what everyone said. It's like, it just had, like, the big problem with Spider-Man 3 was there's too many villains. And Spider-Man 2, it's like, oh no, we won't do that. And that's exactly what happens.
Right. And then they're doing it again. They're gonna do Spider-Man all over again.
Yeah, they're gonna reboot it within like a few years.
Why not do something else? Like, that's the thing that annoys me, is like, instead of doing the same thing, why not, instead of rebooting Spider-Man after it was just done like what, last year? How about like taking a chance on some, you know, young directors that have something interesting to say? You know, the greatest directors that we talk about with film history, you know, Fellini, Kurosawa, Kubrick, Hitchcock, you know, Bergman, all these directors, there's no room for the new generation of Fellinis and Scorseses and Hitchcocks to come through this system, because it's kind of a clique. It's closed off. It's boxed in. So instead of like rebooting Spider-Man, it's like, who cares? We did it twice already. Two series in basically a span of, what, like 10 years.
Yeah.
Let's see what, you know, these young directors have to say, what kind of stories they have on their mind, what kind of perspectives or styles they may have. You know, it's just a complete disregard to the art form, you know, and it treats the American general movie-going public as if they're stupid, you know. Just keep feeding them the same thing and hopefully it sticks. And if it doesn't stick, then do it again, you know?
Well, I won't go so far as to say there's not a way for these young filmmakers to get that. The reason why I say that is because when you look at some of these things, they're being directed by people who were young film, or not young filmmakers, but are considered originally indie filmmakers. I mean,
right.
You, with Batman Begins, you had Chris Nolan, who had only done, at that point, Insomnia and Memento. And then with Star Trek, you get J.J. Abrams, who, well, granted, it wasn't indie, but he did Mission Impossible 3. But he revitalized, quote-unquote, that franchise. And then with Guardians of the Galaxy, you get James Gunn, who's pretty much only done indie films. And then with Jurassic World, you get Colin Trevorrow, who's only done Safety Not Guaranteed. And yeah. then with Spider-Man, you got Mark Webb, who had only done 500 Days of Summer.
Right.
So I do feel, to some extent, that Hollywood is letting these new voices who haven't had the success or hadn't had the opportunity to go over into the quote-unquote mainstream world.
I guess the question, though, is, are they really making the films not so much that they want to make, they obviously want to make them, but I guess the film that is really kind of inside them, I guess. Like, yeah. Someone like J.J. Abrams, you know, he's done, basically, with the exception of Super 8, you know, he's done Mission Impossible franchise, mm-hmm. He's done TV shows, he's done Star Trek franchise, he's doing Star Wars franchise. You know, J.J. Yeah. Abrams is a smart guy. You know, he's extremely creative, really smart. I want to know what's going on in his head. Like, and we get that a little bit through his TV shows, but through his movies, it's just kind of him as a craftsman. Let me just kind of, you know, so a lot of these directors, like Colin Trevorrow, who I saw over the summer, I was on the Jurassic World set, and he seemed like a really interesting guy. And it's like, you know, I haven't seen Safety Not Guaranteed. It sounds like a really interesting movie. Instead of, like, you know, jumping right into the franchise, you know, and kind of being the craftsman, you know, what's really on your mind? What do you mm-hmm. think about certain things in life? Like, so I think the although, yes, these young independent directors are making kind of a big jump into the franchises, they're not necessarily making, you know, the films that that are probably fresh and probably more an expression of who they are, I guess I would say.
Well, and actually, to go off of that, I mean, like, it was Joss Whedon who did the Avengers, and then he talked about how he felt so, like, he felt he needed to do something else. Like, he needed to, like, get away from, like, editing that big film and just kind of have fun. And then he went off and just did Much Ado About Nothing at his home with basically all of his friends who were actors and shot, like, in a week. And it was sometimes, like, they just have to do that. And then another thing, too, because I remember when John Favreau, a big thing that actually of why you kind of lose some good directors is a lot of them feel like they're just hired guns to make a film that just goes with it. Like, if, for example, with Marvel, is make a film that just goes with what they're doing and their overall plan. So you can't really have your own voice in it because you're just hired to make a movie to fit their goals of, like, how we're going as a cinematic universe or whatever. Because that was what John Favreau, I think, had a problem with, and why he did... I think he talked about why he didn't direct Iron Man 3 was because Iron Man 2 was so much about, okay, we have to establish what is going on for later in the
Avengers films.
And
I hate that, too. Like, that, I know I'm just bickering this whole show, but but I strongly hate that, too. And that's why I've kind of... I've gone away from the Marvel films because it's. I feel like I'm always being ripped off whenever I go see anything related to the Avengers because it's all about setting up future films, and the film that you're watching is usually, it feels like filler. It's like, here's some filler until so we can kind of get you excited for a later movie, which will probably have filler in it as well, so that you will go to this other movie. It's a scheme. It's like a tricky thing that they're doing. Even the TV shows like, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter or whatever, they have nothing else to say about these characters or this universe. They're doing it solely to provide filler and to basically, you know, keep remind you, hey, Avengers 2 is coming up. And then after that, you know, 2018 or whatever is going to be Avengers 3. And then it's like they're making this stuff up as they go along. There's no, like, it's not grounded in anything. It's just a lot of filler that they're using. It's like they're building a house, but they don't know, like, what they're building. You know what I mean? It's they're just building stuff, and they're it's getting bigger, but it's not really taking any shape. You know what I mean? That's how I feel about it.
Yeah. I don't know if I'll go that far and say that. I think if you're talking about DC, then I would say yeah. Because this is, like, I look at both of these. Marvel, I feel like when you say they don't know what they're doing, I think Marvel knows what they're doing. I think DC doesn't know what they're doing.
DC's following the same path. I think it's like, oh, Batman and Superman. Hey, people go see that. You know, throw them together. It's nothing about, well, what does this mean for the characters? And where is this going to go and all this other stuff? It's just like, I don't know.
With DC, I'll go off that thing of how DC is doing. I feel that DC doesn't really know what they're doing because, for one, they've been trying to do a Justice League movie for a number of years, and they keep jumping the gun like, oh, it's going to be released on this day, we've signed this screenwriter, and the next thing you know, that screenwriter's out the door, that film's canceled, this director's rumored to come in. It's like the whole Justice League in, like, the 07 or 08 when the writer's strike was going on, like, they were supposed to film, and they were just trying to rush it to get the movie done, and writer's strike happened, they couldn't do it because they didn't have a good script. And nowadays, like a few years back, after Dark Knight Rises ended, it was the whole, like, okay, now we're doing a Justice League movie, and the rumor, it's going straight from, like, it's going to just do Justice League straight off and not establish anything else. And so it just, I don't really have an idea of what they were doing. They appear like they do, but I don't think they do. Because my big thing with DC right now is that after Chris Nolan's Batman, I don't know. I understand. I like the idea. To me, I like the idea of what they're doing with Batman. I didn't know if we needed to, say, bring back the Joker all of a sudden.
Right. There again, like, the performance of Heath Ledger in that film, like, it was incredible. I don't know how true this rumor is, but there's stuff floating out there that, you know, it kind of cost him his life to a certain extent, how much he got into that mindset of the character. I mean, I don't know if that has any factual basis or not, but the point is that, you know, all these things have been done so great before, and to a certain extent, they're sacred to me.
Yeah.
And so, like, when Jack Nicholson did The Joker, it wasn't done to its fullest potential, so it's like, well, okay, there's still room left, you know?
Yeah.
Let's be honest, the Indiana Jones reboot, Batman reboot, Spider-Man, all these reboots, Ghostbusters, they're not going to be as good as the originals. There's no way. There's no way that you can do another Indiana Jones and have it be Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know?
Yeah.
It shows that they obviously don't care much about the output, you know? Hey, it's Indiana Jones. It's all that matters. You know, that's going to bring in the money.
I wouldn't say it's impossible for that to happen. I think it will be very, very difficult. Because the reason why I say it is because, like, people would have probably thought the same thing about Batman when Nolan did it, and then that reboot, or whatever you want to call it, was better than what, or at least Dark Knight was better than what Burton did. And I think Batman Begins is better than what Burton did. So I don't know if it's impossible. It's just, it's an uphill battle. It's an uphill battle because when you're rebooting or remaking a classic like those, audiences tend to, it's almost like, is it really a bad thing? Because what will happen is audience will protest or whatever about that film, and if it's great, oh, that was great, we were wrong, or B, it was horrible, let's go talk about how great the original was. It's almost, yeah. it's not good, but it's like, if that happens, do we gain more of an appreciation for the original? And I think we do.
Maybe so, but it would also be great if that money that went towards the reboot, that's probably going to be bad, went to go fund another new director's film and thus, you know, discover a new generation of interesting directors. You couldn't ask, like, if this is a really weird example, but, like, say Scorsese makes Mean Streets, and then Warner Brothers wants to hire him to do Superman. There's no way he could do it. It's just not him, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, in today's world, in Hollywood, if Scorsese were to make Mean Streets, and then Warner Brothers asked him to do Superman, and he said, no, I can't do it, he would really not have much of an alternative. I mean, he can go back and make smaller films, but it would be hard to get funding. It would be hard to make money. I guess the point is that all this money that's, like, so much money that's being spent on these reboots and remakes could be spent on, you know, when you do a remake or do a reboot, it's got to be special. It's got to be a special, either an idea, like Scarface. When they remade Scarface, it's almost not even a remake. I mean, it's so completely different from the Howard Hawks version in the 30s.
Yeah,
it's like, okay, save it for ideas like that or films like that. But just to do it because it's the same name, it's the same trademark or the same franchise, spend that money and give all these new people, a chance.
Yeah, and like recently, I know, just going off the whole, like, and it's almost done with the reboot thing of like how they just try it again. Like, I know this year or last year we had the Jack Ryan movie with Chris Pine. And that was the fourth actor to play Jack Ryan, and their second attempt to reboot the franchise, because they did it with some of all fears with Ben Affleck, didn't work. They waited about a decade, hey, let's try it a second time, and that didn't work either. So it's like, okay, should we not touch this? And I guess because to me, Jack Ryan just kind of, the Shadow Recruit or whatever, it kind of just, it was nothing different than what we're seeing right now with other films. And, like, with other, like, big action films that are coming out, it just felt like, oh, it's another action film. It didn't really have a significance to be, like, Jack Ryan, if that makes sense. Now, there's certain, like, reboots that are different that, like, go down a different avenue that we haven't seen before, like Batman or Star Trek, or I'll argue 21 Jump Street, because that was just an 80s TV show that Right. I've watched that TV show. Nothing like the movie. Like the movie at all. It's so melodramatic.
It's all about, you know, the ideas behind it and who's doing it and, you know, where it's going to go. I think in some cases it's fine. I think, like, they're doing Fantastic Four. I think that that's probably a good idea because the other two weren't good and did not, you know, achieve the potential they could have. So there are certain cases where, you know, it's okay. It's all about... I'm not against the idea of the reboot or remake in general. It's just the way it's being used kind of as a cop-out. You know, it's like, let's just keep doing it. I don't know. I think most Hollywood movies now, they're kind of homogenized. It all feels like it's being made by the same person. there's very little uniqueness.
There's not a voice.
Yeah, all the voices are getting independent releases.
Yeah.
Limited releases, and it's hard to find them. You know, it was hard to find Boyhood. It's hard to find, believe it or not, it was hard to find Foxcatcher, despite the cast. It's hard to find Whiplash. All these movies with voices, with new directors, you know, they're kind of the rebels. They're having to work outside the system, and thus their films aren't being seen as much. As they probably could be. So it's all about, you know, it's all about new directors. The new Fellini, the new Scorsese, the new Kubrick. It's like, where are these people? You know, that's what I think there needs to be a balance again. There needs to be a balance restored between the business and the art in movies.
Yeah, well, a lot of those people a lot of those people who are those indie directors who get a big hit in the independent world, a lot of them just go off and they do a studio film. And I don't say that they'll do a franchise, but they'll do a studio film and they'll kind of gravitate into that world.
Yeah, and they lose their edge. They lose their essence.
Certain people don't. Like, Soderbergh will go back and forth sometimes. He doesn't do anymore, but he used to go back and forth between indie and studio, and he'd do it, like, back and forth. Linklater did it one time, to my knowledge, with School of Rock, which is, like, one of my favorite films he's done. But like, he's done, like, he did a lot of indie, did that. Some people go back and forth, but it's very difficult nowadays to do that, I feel. You have to have really a lot of control to do something like that. And also,
it is hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Back to what you're saying, because you're talking about like Scorsese, who went from doing Mean Streets. Like, if he did Mean Streets, someone asked him to do Superman, he would turn it down. And a lot of people nowadays probably wouldn't do that. Like, it's like, wow, I made one big film. I can go off and do Jurassic World or Star Trek V. Like, it's like you can do whatever you want to. I think the one director that I will state that I like that hasn't done that yet, in my opinion, is Ben Affleck. Because he talked about, I think he was offered to do Superman originally. Or he was rumored to do Superman. And he turned it down because he didn't feel comfortable doing CGI. He didn't know how to direct CGI type stuff, so he turned it down. And then they tried to offer him to do Justice League. And I think that's when he turned that down as well. But then that's how he got interested in playing Batman, like, for this new one coming up. So I think he realizes, to me, because I think he's a better director than he is a actor. In my opinion, I think Ben Affleck's a great director. I think each film he's done has improved tremendously. But I think very few directors know, like, hey, I'm not ready to do something that big. I don't want to do something that big. But a lot of them, like, they get that one indie or two indie hits, and you're like, I'm off to do a Planet of the Apes movie. But
it's... And how many times have they done Planet of the Apes? I mean, that's just a perfect example of, It's like they won't let something just be great and then leave it alone, you know?
Well, they did like 5 sequels originally. And then Tim Burton did his remake that really was just confusing. And then they've done Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which I haven't seen the new Planet of the Apes series. It's gotten great reviews. And it seems different than, like, say, what Burton did, because it's actually something we haven't seen before. Or what I read one time was that, which is actually what they should be doing if they remake or reboot stuff, is they actually, someone said that basically Rise of the Planet of the Apes and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes was actually just remakes of some of the bad sequels they did in, like, the 70s. And, like, had good concepts, but they just was really bad, and they just misfired on it. And they're just basically remake. I don't know if this is true, because I haven't seen any of those. It's basically remaking those ideas that didn't work well. I can't remember who it was. I think it was John Waters or someone that said, stop remaking the classics. Remake the bad movies that, like, had good concepts.
I think that's an excellent point, because
yeah,
that's, you know, that's the situation where you might want to do a remake, where you might want to reimagine something.
Yeah.
You go back to Scarface, you go to, like, Ocean's 11, you know, it started the Rat Pack in the 60s, but it didn't seem like it really took off. And then the Soderbergh one is probably more notable to people.
Yeah, it is.
Because it's a better film.
It is.
There's a whole bunch of stuff out there that can be remade and be done better or be done differently. Mm-hmm. It's now, like I keep saying, it's the only thing. That's kind of like what the article from Grantland was talking about. It's like that's the only thing that they're offering now is the same. There's a lot of directors start out as independent and then jump into that, you know, take the big leap into making a big studio film. But a lot of directors can't do that, you know?
Yeah.
They can't, because they're not being true to themselves when they do that. If it's like, well, you know, I don't really want to make a movie about monkeys or dinosaurs, or, you know, as much as I love Jurassic Park, you know, not everyone wants to make films about that kind of stuff or make superhero or comic book movies or, you know, and so it's kind of like, well, what if I want to make a film about, you know, the loss of innocence or something? Or what if I want to make a film about, you know, crime in New York in the 1980s or something? Or so it's like there's very little room left. It's kind of like, well, now you did your independent movie. Either you jump on board with the franchises or you don't jump on at all.
Yeah. It's difficult. I'll be honest with you. If someone offered me Batman and I had a good story to tell, I would so take it. I don't care, because Batman's one thing I would do. But again, why the whole thing is there a good story to tell? Is there a reason to tell it?
Yeah.
Like that's a big problem with sequels, actually, is, and people say they do this when they're writing the sequel, but I don't think it's true all the time, is when you're making a sequel, you have to ask the question, is there a reason for these characters to go on a new, like, to have a new journey or whatever? Like, is there a reason we should come back to them?
Right.
It's like, and like Linklater does it in his, the Before series.
Excellent.
Before,
yeah,
like,
excellent.
It's like, is there a reason to come back to these characters 10 years later? Yeah, there is.
Right. And, it's authentic. There's an authenticity to, like, there's a real reason for us to come back, and there's more to tell from the story. It's not like too many sequels try to kind of milk off an idea that worked previously. So it's kind of like, you know, well, this really worked. You know, like, for instance, like The Hangover. You know, I don't like it that much, but it did great. It was pretty critically successful, financially successful. Hey, that worked. Let's milk that idea and see what else we can get out of it and make another movie based on the excess of what we could get out of that idea.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's not as good because there's no real reason. There's nothing really being added to what was before. It was just kind of, you know, and too many sequels do that nowadays. It's,
yeah.
I think the Godfather trilogy is the best example of how to do sequels. despite what one may think of part three.
Yeah.
You know, it's like each film, it wasn't just like, referring to the original and trying to kind of just live off of that one. It was like a whole different, kind of very different tonally, very different story-wise and structurally. Yeah. There was there's more to tell and there was more to do in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, that's why Dark Knight works too to me, is that it just moves on. That's another thing. Right. It's like they have to reference what happened in the first one. Just move on. Right. just get by with it. Like, that's why the Indiana Jones stuff worked in the 80s and early 90s, because it was a different journey. It didn't like, here's what happened in the first one. And just like The Hangover, because I have my roommate will say, like, Hangover 1, I will argue this, but he's like the most original comedy in a long time. Hangover 2, horrible. It's the same exact movie. Nothing changes. It's like, in Hangover 2, it was pretty much the same exact story.
Yeah.
It was the same exact story. Like, even the revelation at the end is the same. It's done by the same character. It's everything's the same. I haven't, because I didn't like 2 at all because of that fact. I haven't even seen 3 yet. I don't plan on seeing 3.
I don't either. It's like, why even, and that's another thing too, is making sequels to bad movies. You know, I remember when like Green Lantern came out years ago, like I think it was 2010, and it was awful. It was terrible. Yeah. And then they already, like, once it was released, they already greenlit a sequel. Yeah. And now it's not going to be made. They're going to probably reboot it.
Yeah.
But the fact that they greenlit a sequel for a film that was terrible.
Yeah.
And that was spent, that so much money was spent on. It's just like baffling. It's like, well, how are you going to, even if the sequel's better than the original, the whole story, you know, that you're covering from 1 to 2 is still tainted because the first one was so bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, I like that Green Lantern, because I have a roommate who's also very big into comics, because I have a lot of roommates who are film people. But like I think they haven't gotten Green Lantern right yet, which I agree with. They haven't really gotten it right.
Right. And that would be a reason to reboot it. Yeah.
Yeah. That movie, because I remember reading that movie at the news a year later, like, oh, we're still trying to make a sequel. We've signed on the writers who did the first movie, and it's gonna be great. And I was like, you do know the screenplay was one of the worst parts of that movie, right? Like it was not a great screenplay. Like, I mean,
and why make a sequel to a film that was bad? Like, there again, it's like that doesn't make any sense. Because even if 1 and 2 are different and cover different territory, it's still, they're still connected. They're still kind of part of one, you know, arc. And so it's like, even if if you try to do it again with the same writers and the same characters, and it's better than the first one, it's still tainted. It's still bad, because the first one, your story was still has still suffered because the first installment was so crappy. You know, so it's one of the things that I hate the most is when they, like, Fantastic Four 2 or whatever it was called, shouldn't even happen.
Yeah, Rise of Silver Surfer.
Yeah, and it was a little bit better from what I remember. I saw it years ago. I couldn't care less about some of those franchises, but that one, like, it was a little bit better than the original, but that didn't really mean much, you know?
Yeah.
Because the first one was so bad. So obviously, it's like, well, why continue with this story, you know, when the first one wasn't that good and the second one was a little bit better? Should we do another one? You know, I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, I guess the question is, what is bad? If that makes sense. Like, is bad?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're right. You know, all movies and all art is subjective. But I guess when a film is so critically panned and fans don't like it, you know, that constitutes bad.
Yeah, because what I mean by bad is like certain things, like for example, it's like, is it bad if it doesn't make money? Is it bad, like, because I'm looking at like Kick-Ass, like it made $96 million. It was decent. It got a sequel, but it got good reviews and fans liked it when it came out the first time. But it doesn't yell, I mean, because what it is, it yells sequel, but, like, it didn't yell sequel because it made $90 million. Usually it's like people, it's so, because it's like nowadays it's like, if it passes $150 million or if it passes $100 million, green light the sequel. It's like, that's the next step. It's like, we don't know what it's going to be yet, but we're green lighting a sequel. And nowadays, too, going off of that, because we're so sequel, which granted, this has been going on for years, but a lot of films are supposed to be franchise starters. They don't let those the first films stand alone. Like, they have that kind of ending. It's like, oh, there's going to be a sequel. Like, even Batman Begins did it. Like, let's just be real. It has the whole thing at the end.
But that wasn't their intention. That was kind of a wink, I think. Yeah. I don't think they had the intention at the time of doing another one. That was just kind of like a... but you're right. Now, in hindsight, it works like that, since there are sequels.
Yeah. It's like, hey, the movie's not really over.
Yeah. And like with Batman, they knew... Another problem with these franchises is that they try to... It's the same thing with Marvel. They make it up as they go along, and they see how far they can go. Like, it's like, let's keep making more until they get bad. And so with Dark Knight, Dark Knight Trilogy, they knew, like, okay, we're going to stop the story. We're going to, you know, we're going to have an ending. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's an integrity there. Where it's like, we're not just going to keep making more and more. You know, we want this to stand, you know, we want this to be remembered as something great. And so it's not about making more. It's about, you know, the quality of the overall series. So we're gonna have an ending. We're gonna do one more, a third film, and that's it. And the purpose of the third film is to kind of conclude everything.
Yeah.
So yeah.
But the thing is, that's been around for a long, long time. I don't mean this in a mean way, but sometimes I like watching these movies that are like, this is going to be a franchise, and then we never see them ever again. It's like, I remember, because I didn't want to go see it, but my friend did, and so I had to, when Last Airbender was in theaters. Oh, and, we went and saw Last Airbender, and it starts off Chapter 1, and I'm like, I already know there's not going to be a Chapter 2 and 3. Like, right. I know there's not going to be a Chapter 2 and 3. Like, I was like, critics have hated this movie, fans have hated this movie. I was like, it's going to be bad. Like, I know it's going to be bad. And like there was like never a Chapter 2 and 3. And there's someone out there who's waiting for a Chapter 2 and 3, I feel. Like, there's someone that's like, I really wanted a Chapter 2 of Last Airbender.
Yeah.
It's like, because it was promised to me. And that happens, like, the thing is, it's been going around since the 80s, since the 70s with those type films. It's like, this is supposed to be a franchise, and it doesn't happen. Like I said, Hollywood, and it's in the article that you posted as well from Grantland by Mark Harris, it's like, Hollywood's been does the whole sequel thing. It's been doing the sequel thing for a long time. It's been doing the remake, reboot stuff for a long time, not to the degree that we're doing now. Like I said, Batman Begins was kind of the one that changed. Because I love listening to movies or like to directors who are rebooting a franchise right now, because it's like everyone's comparing it to Batman Begins.
Right.
Like, everyone compares their new reboot to Batman Begins.
And it's like how everyone's sequel, like even Joss Whedon compared Avengers 2 to Godfather Part 2.
Yeah.
You know, or something like that. It's like, give me a break, you know?
It's either Godfather Part 2 or Dark Knight nowadays. It's like, if it's a reboot, we're going very Batman Begins with this. It's very dark and gritty. I'm like, that, like, Nolan just changed everything because now everyone's trying to do it.
The problem is that most movies made today through Hollywood are disposable, you know? I mean, it's like fast food, you know? You're hungry, it's cheap, it's mass produced, you go get some, you're full, and then you forget about it, you know?
It's forgettable.
And after you're done eating it, it's done. You know, not like a nice restaurant where you go and you have an experience and you have an incredible meal and you remember it years down the road. When it's like, oh, that was I remember I went to that place and so-and-so, and it's fantastic, and this is the name of the chef, and all that kind of stuff. It's a very – it's two totally different things. So yeah. Hollywood has become fast food. It's all disposable. It's all just kind of mass-produced crap just to kind of, you know, pass time for the most part. There are a few, very, very few exceptions nowadays. Yeah, because look, I mean, we talk about Hitchcock and all these other directors I name, like 8 1/2 or La Dolce Vita from Fellini. It's like those movies were made like 60 some odd years ago, and we're still talking about them today. You know, yeah. A lot of these reboots that all these kind of fanboys are excited about, no one's going to care about them decades from now. They're not. They're gonna fade away.
To go off of that, like I can't remember. I think it was Matt Damon that said this. It was someone that said this. It was like, when it comes to the Oscars, if you want to see how important a film is, award the Oscars 20 years after that movie came out, because time tells greatness to me.
Coppola said the same thing. Like, a film shouldn't be judged until like 10 years after it's released.
Yeah, it's like, because like sometimes it's like, like when Psycho came out by Hitchcock, people like thought it was terrible, or I didn't think it was great. Like, it didn't get great reviews. Or no, I'm sorry. Psycho, at least Vertigo got terrible reviews when it came out.
Yeah, now it's number one and on.
Now it's like considered a great film. Citizen Kane didn't get great reviews. And then you look at certain movies, just like when they were at Oscars, they got beat by like really they're forgettable films nowadays. Like, it's like recently the Academy Awards actually went back and said, like, where did we mess up at? They actually did like a revote of like their past awards. And I think it was, Oscar votes. Yeah, it was like Brokeback Mountain would have beat Crash. Shawshank Redemption would have beat Forrest Gump. Let's see. My Left Foot would have beat Drive Miss Daisy. Saving Private Ryan would have beat Shakespeare in Love. All the President's Men would have lost to Rocky.
Or like Goodfellas.
Who did Goodfellas lose to?
Dances with Wolves.
They didn't think that, apparently. They thought Dances with Wolves should have won, because I don't see a, like, where they messed up at.
I kind of tend to agree that it's usually time. That it's kind of like movies can be like fine wine. It's like time is makes it better, and it also kind of gives you a better understanding of what the movies were. Some movies just get better as they age.
I think, and if they're relevant for nowadays, if they're relevant for nowadays time, some movies get dated pretty quickly. And they're not relevant, and that's you lose the edge of what it had when it came out.
Right.
But certain movies, like, they might not ever lose their comedy. They might not ever lose their impact.
To me, the everyone talks about the 1970s as kind of a nostalgic golden age for American filmmaking. It was kind of our new wave. You know, like the French had their new wave, and German had their new wave. You know, we had a period of this kind of creative freedom. But what? Eventually, it all kind of crumbled with Heaven's Gate and United Artists, and you know, overfunding films. But the thing is, like, let's look back. Why were the films so great? What was the system like back then? Okay, there were studios just like there are today, but there was trust, there was creative freedom, there was the importance of the director as an artist, kind of an authority. Mm-hmm. You know, where the director was kind of treated as not just a craftsman for hire, but kind of an important, you know, the way a lot of records treat musicians was the way that studios were treating directors and actresses and actors in that period of time. I mean, it's like people always talk about, why were those films so great? It's like, it's obvious. It's because the system, because there was freedom, because eventually it crumbled because there wasn't enough regulation. But the reason why so many films from the 70s are good, and why we have directors like Spielberg and Scorsese and Coppola and, you know, and Friedkin and a lot of these directors, it was because of the freedom and the integrity and the trust in the director, you know, as an artist, not as a, you know, put the puzzle pieces together that someone else did a few years ago and repackage it and sell it, you know. Yeah. So that's kind of that to me is the defining line. It's a huge contrast, and the way that things were before compared to the way that things were are now, things mm-hmm. were better before.
And the funny thing is, some people will say, because they might say that now, but like at certain points, you'd probably have filmmakers from the 70s that would say like things were better before. Like, before their time. That's kind of the whole idea of, like, I mean, I don't know if people 15, 20 years from now will say that this time right now is better than before, but you never know. It's like the whole Midnight in Paris loop of, like, oh, the 20s are better than now. They go to the 20s. Well, turn of the century is better than the 20s. It's like...
Yeah, I get how nostalgia can work that way. I think that that even the directors that worked during that time, when they're mm-hmm. interviewed, will talk about how... You know, there was it, working today compared to then is so completely different that, yeah. you know, we realized that back then we really had it made, you know.
Yeah. Because I don't know, if you compare now to the studio system, I don't know if I'd say that the studio system was better. Because you have to realize back in the studio system time, the director really didn't have control over what he was doing. It's like back then, unless you like became John Ford or whoever, a lot of them were just like, "Hey, here's this movie, go make it. You got 4 weeks. Good, you're done. Yeah, move on to the next film." It was like you could be a director and make 3 or 4 films a year or more because you just moved from project to project. You just went there, you shot, and you moved on, and the producer had the control over it.
Yeah, the system was definitely different. It's definitely a different story in like the 50s, 40s, and 30s, and whatnot. It's just like the 70s to me is kind of a defining period of time that we can learn a lot from.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 70s is when you had the thing, like the 70s is when you had end up like different, you had new stories being told. Late 60s into 70s, when you had things like Easy Rider and Graduate and things like that come out, and it started pushing the boundaries of what you could tell. But that's also too because the culture at the time was changing. With the Vietnam War and all that stuff, everything was changing. So films had to change with it.
There's a lot culturally happening now too, but it's not getting covered because there's no room. You know.
Studios aren't covering it.
Yeah.
So, I think we're getting close to our time, so we're gonna have to. Call it an episode. So, Chris, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah. What's drop your Twitter handle. We usually drop our Twitter handles at the very end of each show. So,
you know, I don't really use my Twitter that much, honestly. It's like, I don't even remember what it is, to be quite frank. I'm about to delete it. So,
never mind. Don't follow Chris on Twitter. you can follow CineNation.
Find me on Facebook, I guess. Yeah.
You can find Chris on Facebook and ask him questions. You can find CineNation on Twitter at CineNation Show. You can also find me on Twitter at BCS_TheFilmKid. Send us any questions you have. We'll try to answer them. You can also like our page on Facebook at CineNation.